And now, you're tuned into RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
Hello and welcome back once again to your RBLR Rays show. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing swell. I've just had some fun Twitter conversations this week about shortstops of Rays past, and there were some real membersome guys that came up. Jeff Kepinger, do you remember him?
He turned up... Briefly, very vaguely. Yeah, I do. My guy that I always remember is Adani Echevarria. Do you remember Adani Echevarria? I just remember because he looked so good fielding, and then he just like could not hit at all. But he looked really good on the fielding side of things. And if you want to continue to see this group of guys, these two of us that look really good talking, you should like and subscribe and continue to be a part of what we're building here at the RBLR Rays network here. We just added a new show just recently. You should guys go check it out. It's awesome. We're continuing to add new stuff, add new content, grow this awesome brand that we're here for. And the only way we can do it is if you guys are here with us. So keep sticking around, keep liking, subscribing, sharing, spreading it around to your friends. It means a lot to us every time you do it. This last week has been a bit of an interesting one. We've gotten a little bit of news here and there. The big one was the awards that were announced. The Gold Glove and Silver Sluggers were announced over this last week. Pat, any thoughts? I have some thoughts about Silver Slugger specifically. Do you have any thoughts just generally about what we saw from there?
Yeah, so Gold Glovers and Silver Slugger awards are my least favorite awards because they very rarely make much sense. They're voted on in a completely different way to the like regular BWAA awards, where it's players, managers, and stuff like that vote on this award. And that's meant that usually it's very eye-testy, or it's just like, hey, who have you heard of? Oh, that guy on the Yankees, he's pretty good. Let's vote for him. So it often means that players that are kind of having great seasons but on, say, teams that aren't contending or teams that aren't big markets can tend to get snubbed in these kind of awards. So I've kind of ignored them the past few years, but that doesn't mean that we've had some awful decisions in terms of who's been getting awards and who's not been getting awards. And I think there's a big one with Silver Slugger this year. I think you want to talk about that.
I do. I do want to talk about it because it's pretty bad. It's as bad as a snub gets, in my opinion. Isak Paredes was up for the Silver Slugger in two categories, third base and utility. And he was like significantly better than both of the winners. Let me just give you some quick hitter stats on Isak. 137 WRC plus, 4.3 F4, which doesn't matter because it's just offense, but 137 WRC plus, 31 home runs, 98 RBIs, a 10.2% walk rate, 18.2% K rate, 841 OPS, 238 ISO, 362 weighted on base and plus average. Really, really good season. There were two players that were just that these people decided were better offensively than Isak Paredes. The first one at third base was Rafael Devers. His WRC plus, which by the way is rated runs created plus, which means that above 100 is how many more, you know, runs were created by this player above average. So according to that statistic from FanGraphs, Isak Paredes created 37 more runs than the average. Devers created 24 more runs than the average, which means that Isak created 13 more runs. And by the way, WRC plus is based on an at-bat basis. Just to get into the weeds a little bit here, just for those who don't know, it's based on an at-bat basis, which means it doesn't factor in base running, doesn't factor in defense or any of that. It's purely how good of a hitter are you? How much value do you add with your bat? And according to FanGraphs, Isak added 13 more runs than Devers did. And when you look at the counting stats that some people would point to, he has two more home runs, 33, two more RBIs, and then every other statistic except for OPS, which Devers is 10 points higher, Paredes is better. He has a higher walk rate, a lower strikeout rate, a higher ISO, a higher WOBA, And he, and not that it matters for this one, because WAR is not a stat that would apply to Silver Slugger, but he has 1.2 more WAR, F-WAR, than Devers does. There's just no reason for it except the fact that Rafael Devers is a name and he plays in Boston, and that's why he won, because he was had a good season and they just decided, oh, that's good enough. We're just going to put Devers in instead of putting it in for Isak, who had a better season in almost every quantifiable way except for home runs and RBIs, which he only was lesser than by two, which is not a negligible. When you look at a stat like that and it's and they're that close – in my brain, what that says is I need to go look at the other statistics. I need to go look at the other things that this guy did to determine who is better. And when you go to look to those other things, Isak is better in every single way. And then we go to utility, where Henderson won above Isak Paredes. And Henderson had worse stats than Devers. His WRC plus is a 123. So again, 14 less runs created than Isak. 28 home runs, 3 less, 82 RBIs, 16 less. His walk percentage was the same. His K rate was, 7 points higher at 25%, 25.6% K rate. So he struck out way more. OPS was lower. ISO was lower. WOBA was lower. Every single statistic. And just because I really wanted to give them credit, because it's just a hitting award. It's what it's supposed to be. But we'll be really charitable to Henderson and talk about all his offense. Off is a stat that Fangraphs puts out that determines the offensive value of a player above average, runs created offensively, and includes base running as well as your hitting. For Henderson, his off stat was 22.3, which is really, really good. Isak, he doesn't really steal bases. That's probably going to hurt him. 24.1. Every measurable statistic, Isak is better. Why do I care? Because it's Silver Slugger. It's obviously somewhat a popularity contest. It's for the people in the big markets who are the big names that win it. Why do I care? Because a guy like Isak is going to go back into be arbitrating his contract in years down the line, and they're going to look at his stat sheets and be like, not many awards, was never the best at your position, doesn't look like to me. We're going to dock you a couple $1 million because you were never the best. Or they might look at Henderson and say, well, you got a couple Silver Sluggers, we got to give you some more money. These awards cost people money down the line on their contracts because you get these general managers who just go in there, or arbiters that go in there, and they just say, well, I don't see those SS's on your baseball reference page, so we're going to give you a little bit less money. And it's ridiculous, but it happens. And so it bothers me when a guy is clearly better at two positions and yet he wins neither of them. It's just really frustrating. It's annoying because it's clearly just because he plays for the Rays and he's a platoon bat, which is not accurate, but that's what he gets pegged as, or he's just a system player down there in Tampa Bay, analytic bay or whatever, and they denigrate what he does and the value of what he brings to the table, and they're not respecting him. And it bothers me. It bothers me that the national media, that everyone else doesn't respect these guys because they deserve it. They deserve to be respected. And it's gonna and unfortunately, in my opinion, what it's probably gonna take is winning a championship for any of these guys who've been playing so well down here to get the respect they deserve. I'm sick of it. It just grinds my gears. It hit me the wrong way. Like if it had been close, if it had been like 130 WRC plus or 132 WRC plus for these guys, I would have gotten over it. But 10 points difference really bugs me. 13 and 14 points difference really bugs me. I don't know if it bugs you, Pat, but it bugs the heck out of me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Bugs the heck out of me. It has, and it will continue to do so because I've already went on rants about, even the All-Star game and just everything that discredits the Rays. And with Paredes in particular, even on those counting stats advantage that Devers has, 2 home runs, 2 RBIs, Devers played 10 more games this year than Paredes. Given 10 extra games, could Paredes hit 2 home runs and drive in 2?
Easily.
I would take the over on that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just insanity. And an extra point on WRC plus 2 is that it also factors competition faced and parks played as well. And Devers plays in a generally pretty hitter-friendly park in Fenway. Mm-hmm. And Paredes, Tropicana Field actually has a kind of, it's more, slightly more of a pitcher's park in terms of park factor. Mm-hmm. So that's taken into consideration as well. So what he's doing is even better in a worse ballpark to do hitting in. So it's just, it's mind-boggling.
Especially to left field, right? Like, especially to left field in Tropicana Field. I would say it would be easier to hit as a lefty in Tropicana Field than it would be to hit as a righty, because it's a little bit more favorable down the right field line than it is down the left field line, at least to me. Like, I could probably get into it a little bit more.
Unless you really get into the 162 landing, and that's like a nice spot. But I'm shocked that Paredes never hit a home run down there all year.
He wasn't really hitting him down there. He didn't really hit cheap home runs. Basically, all of them were like, would have been a home run in most ballparks. Like, he wasn't really hitting cheapies. And it just bugs me that these guys who play so hard and clearly. Isak is a guy who is working on his craft. He's improving year over year in basically every statistic. He's going to have another great year next year. We're going to get to his player review, and I'm going to tell you that he is going to have another amazing year next year. And yet, it's just frustrating to me that we're in this place where we have to, you know, talk about him not winning these awards when he clearly has deserved them. So that's frustrating to me. Another award that is going to be coming out soon is the Manager of the Year. And there is a Rays manager, of course. Kevin Cash is up for that Manager of the Year. What do you think about that? You think he has a good chance to win Manager of the Year there? There's some competition there, but what do you think?
I don't think he's going to win Manager of the Year because this is not because Kevin Cash didn't do a bad job. He did an outstanding job. In fact, Eric Neander and Pete Bendix said it was the best job he has done as a manager this year. So Manager of the Year award is such a funny one because there's no kind of weighted manager wins created plus. there's no stat that can quantify how good a manager is, especially considering most of the stuff that I think a manager does that's effective does not take place in front of us on camera. I think it's all about the man management. It's all about setting a culture within a team, especially consider in 2023 when there is a big kind of presumption that most managers kind of have got their decisions mapped out ready before the game even starts. I don't think that's entirely true. I think there is wiggle room, but they do a lot of due diligence before their games to kind of go, right, if we're in this spot at this time, this is our best option. If we're in this spot at this time, so they don't have to, you know, do as much gut feel calls. And if that's the case, then one, it's about the prep work that you do, and two, it's the man management and culture that you set that makes the difference as a manager. Kevin Cash had to deal with more than ever before in a Rays season, I think, with the amount of injuries that he sustained to the starting rotation, with the Wander Franco situation. There were actually two Wander Franco situations this year. One was significantly lesser now that we know about the second one. But the first one was a key moment of management where Wander Franco was slumping. He was getting very heated and being a bad presence in the clubhouse. He was getting difficult for other players to be around. So he sat him down, talked to him and said, listen, this is not how we do things here. This is how we do the best by our teammates. This is how we do the best by our team as a whole. This is how you be productive. This is how you have a healthy mindset as a baseball player where you are going to have ups and downs. You're going to ride the bench just so you realize that that's not how we do things here for a couple of games. And then what happens? He comes back. The slump is over and he's fine. And then, of course, who knows the kind of effects that ripple through the clubhouse in August when the second Wander Franco incident occurred. But you know what happened? We actually played a really good stretch of baseball off the back of that thing happening. We actually went something like 8-2 in our next 10 games, which again is the culture that he's setting, the way that he and his coaching staff put all the players in that clubhouse in the best possible position to succeed. And even when there is that horrible cycle of particularly pitches coming up and down and up and down, or like you're coming up, you're going to pitch five innings and then get DFA'd, whatever. no person who has played for the Rays in 2023 or as long as Kevin Cash has been the manager and has said a bad thing about the clubhouse or about the culture. They have always said they have felt looked after. They've always felt like they've been put in a position to improve and succeed, and that they always knew what the plan for them as an individual player was and how they are going to benefit the team. That makes Cash a phenomenal manager. Now, he is going up against Brandon Hyde of the Orioles and Bruce Bochy of the Rangers. Now, this is a regular season award.
Not a postseason award.
Yeah, the votes were cast before the postseason even started. So it would have had zero factor. Bruce Bochy, I think, is a non-factor in this. I think he will be third. Purely because the last, I've said it a million times, but the Rangers did not play good baseball down the stretch. And they blew the division on the last day. Would you vote for someone who blew the division on the last day of the season without knowing what's happening in the playoffs?
No, probably not.
That's like, imagine voting Terry Francona for manager of the year in 2011. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So take him out of the equation. Brandon Hyde and Kevin Cash. The easy scenario, and I think the most likely scenario, is go, well, the Orioles were actually forecast to be worse than the Rays this year, and they actually were better than them by 2-3 games, and won the division in an extremely tight one. They won over 100 games. The Rays were really good, but the Orioles were even better, even though the Orioles were projected to be worse. So therefore, Brandon Hyde is a better manager. I would fundamentally disagree. Kevin Cash won 99 games with maybe the most injured contending squad in baseball history, especially on the pitching front. Brandon Hyde had John Means out at the start of the year, and his lineup was pretty much fully healthy all the time. They had no significant injuries to the starting lineup pretty much all year. Nobody was out for a significant amount of time. Meanwhile, for the Rays, we had Brandon Lau out. We had pretty much everyone out. Jose Siri. We had, of course, the Wander Franco situation. Yandy Diaz had some time on and off his feet. So it was, and then the pitching staff, which we all know. And yet, only 3 games difference between the two squads. And also, Brandon Hyde destroyed poor Felix Bautista's arm. By just bringing him out there every single day and was like, listen, I don't care if we're up by 4 runs. You're coming out and giving me a 2-inning save, buddy. And then he got injured and got Tommy John, and everyone was like, oh, what a surprise. We all saw that coming. He just kept running him out there. And I don't think that is good nor responsible managing either. It made me sick because Felix Bautista is an amazing pitcher, one of the best relievers in the game. And he's going to have a good chunk of his prime ruined by Brandon Hyde chasing all of these saves when he had a perfectly good alternative in Yennier Cano that he could have rolled out occasionally. So I don't think it was good management. I think it was irresponsible and unsafe management at times. And even though Brandon Hyde is 90% going to win the award, I think Kevin Cash absolutely deserves it. I think Cash will come second, but I think it'll be a pretty distant second. And I also know that this is an annoying thing about Manager of the Year, is there is a bit of voter fatigue. And actually, Kevin Cash, I think this is like his 5th straight. I think this is 4th year in 5 being in the final 3.
Sounds about right, yeah.
And he won it back-to-back years. He's only the second manager in history to win it in back-to-back years because people don't like to do that. So I think there's a bit of voter fatigue on Kevin Cash as well, which won't help his case either. So I think he is the manager of the year, even if he doesn't get the title. Do you have any additional thoughts on management? Because I know that's a subject I'm quite passionate about, but do you have any thoughts on Cash versus Hyde, technically versus Bochy, manager of the year?
I think the point you make about voter fatigue is a really good one, because I think that in a situation where they, you know, a voter might be looking for an excuse to vote for Brandon Hyde instead of Cash, if they know, you know, in their heart of hearts that Cash is probably a better manager, they could look and say, well, winning it 3 times in a year, that's kind of a, like, generally speaking, it's a weird, like, ethos around a three-peat of any kind in sports. And to give someone a 3-in-a-row award doesn't happen very often. And generally, if they're gonna, it's gonna happen, it's gotta be like so like clear cut and so obvious where there's almost no other contender. And while to us, I feel like we kind of feel that way, like it's pretty clear to us, it's not really up for debate that Kevin Cash is a better manager than Brandon Hyde, and did a better job this year managing his team than, you know, Brandon Hyde did. I don't think the general public's going to feel that way. And I think they're probably going to vote, you know, Brandon Hyde. I think a really good point about Batista is made, because I think this is actually a mistake that Cash has made in his career. I think he made it with Nick Anderson, and I think he's mm-hmm. better for it. He made that mistake, and he has, you know, learned from it. And when you look at the way he has treated the relievers in the last year and a half or so, last 2 years, you can tell that he's learned that lesson. You can tell that he's a better manager, which just goes to show, like, I mean, obviously Kevin Cash is more experienced. So in a way that gives him an advantage when if we're just trying to say who's a better manager. I think Cash is better not only because he's just better generally, but also he has a lot more experience, and he's learned from his mistakes. There are some managers out there who don't, some former White Sox managers, just to name one off the top of my head, who didn't learn from their mistakes and kept making them, and that's why they're not managing anymore. Kevin Cash is not that way. He learned from his mistake, and he's changed the way he does things to adapt to that. Brandon Hyde, remains to be seen if he's going to learn from that mistake. But to me, I think that mistake is enough for me to give it to Cash handily on top of everything else that you look at. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And my last kind of thought on it, on Kevin Cash as a manager, is like, he's also the longest tenured manager in baseball now that Craig Counsell's left and Terry Francona's retired. I am a little worried about Kevin Cash's future with the Rays, just because Craig Counsell's just completely reset the market for what a manager could earn. It felt very Joe Maddon-esque what Craig Counsell's just done. And I'm worried about Cash maybe earning a massive sack of money somewhere else. So I'm like, we need to hurry up and extend that guy real soon.
I agree. And I think that they would be foolish not to. I think it would be a grave mistake for Stu Sternberg at the top of the organization to say, well, you can just plug anybody in there and we'll be fine. Cause I don't think that's the case. I think Cash as a leader of men is something you do not replace easily. I mean, I think that I'm sure there's a good pipeline of talent, you know, from Durham all the way up, of really good people. I don't doubt that. But when you have a true leader of men, those do not grow on trees. They just don't. So I feel the same way as you. They need to make a move now and just lock him down, because you do not want to get into a bidding war with, you know, one of these, you know, New York teams that's going to churn through another manager, or one of these other big market teams that is going to be, that will be looking for a manager when they inevitably churn through somebody else. You don't want to be in that scenario. So hopefully they make the right decision and put Kevin Cash on the top of the most paid managers list sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
So, bouncing off of that, onto our question of the week from last week, we asked all of you, Pat specifically asked on Twitter after we asked on the episode, that asking y'all, what do we think we should do at shortstop in 2024, assuming Wander's not coming back, which is kind of where we're at right now. You gave four options on there. They were riding with Taylor Walls, giving Basabe a chance, Junior Caminero season, or someone else. And the fans, they had a pretty strong opinion of those options, and that was Junior Caminero season. That is what they said. What is your thought on that choice?
Yeah, it was an overwhelming majority in those polled as well. If you guys want to be part of these polls where we ask our question of the week, be sure to give me a follow at Depressed Rays on Twitter. I'm UK Rays boy, and you can see it down there. It was 75% said Junior Caminero season of those that replied. And that is a huge majority. That is like
a lot.
Consensus. If this was in Parliament, we'd be passing that as a Bill of Rights. So Junior Caminero opening day shortstop is the proposition there. Love the enthusiasm. Don't think it's quite there yet. There's a lot of promising signs about Junior Caminero. such as his raw power, the ability to just mash the ball whenever he hits it. I think he's showing, considering where he was at the start of this year in terms of level wise, he's showing a decent eye at the plate. He has competitive at bats. He does hit the ball into the ground a lot from what we've seen at the major league level. And he's still not played a game at AAA. So that's, is it that he skipped AAA? Yeah. Yeah.
That's correct. So, he's not played a game.
So I think there's a bit of seasoning there. And, you know, he showed the odd good defensive play in the field, but most of them came from third base. The Rays were really reluctant to put him out there at shortstop, which is a really telling sign about how they value his fielding right now. He's just lacking in reps, both at the plate and in the field, to be a regular major league shortstop, I think. I don't dislike Junior Caminero, but I think it would be detrimental to his long-term development to have him as the opening day shortstop. I think we should, I mean, if he has a monster spring, maybe he forces the conversation. But for now, I'd say stick him in AAA, give him a few more reps where he can definitely play every day, and then call him up maybe mid-season if he's showing promise. But I'm not quite 100% sold on calling him up straight away. There are lots of horror stories of calling people up too early and then it flattens their development. And I don't want that to happen with Junior because he's got, you know, huge potential and a lot of great tools. And I want to do right by him by not rushing him. So I'm not thrilled about giving him the opening day job. But then again, I'm also not jazzed about Walls and Basabe either. What do you think, Zach?
So the point about not stunning his development, I think, is a really good one, especially because if you're starting him at shortstop opening day, we're talking about the hitting side of things. He's got to go out there and play shortstop every day. That's not easy to be the starting shortstop for a major league organization. Not easy to do, especially one that has championship aspirations every single year, as does the Rays. There's a level of, you know, standard at that position, especially recently for the Rays. There's a standard of that position, and from a defensive perspective too. So that's a lot of stress to put on a young player. I don't know that sticking him out there and saying, you know, go for it, kid, it's the best thing to do. I think we've seen that, you know, just if all you have to do is look, you know, up the road in the AL East to New York to see what putting players in positions when they're not actually ready for, you know, too early can do to them. And like, you know, they have a couple players, Volpe kind of recovered, Peraza has not, you know, they may have wrecked him. Like, I mean, it hasn't looked good. You know, I know Volpe won a gold glove by default because the person who should have won the gold glove was not available for the award. But like, I mean, it was not a good season offensively from Volpe at all. He got a little better towards the end, but like, and I think Caminero is a better hitter than Volpe, but like, do we really want to see a season like that from Caminero when we just don't need to? Like, you just don't need to do that. You can put Walls and, you know, Basabe out there and let Caminero cook a little bit more in Durham. Like, you know, and he, if you're going to put him out there, he'll be a rookie. Rookies, as Ben is, you know, as Ben is always wont to say, rookies are bad at basically everything. And if you're going to put him up there day one without any other, you know, ability to get seasoned and have that experience, especially at shortstop, he has not played a whole lot of innings at shortstop for his career. I think, you know, just this last year, let's see if I can find the amount of innings. He only played like 20 innings at shortstop. I think 20 games at shortstop. That's not a lot of games. 20 games at shortstop for Junior Caminero in the last season. Like it's just not, I just don't like that. I think that puts him, sets him up to fail. And the Rays are not going to do that. The Rays, part of the reason why Rays prospects tend to come up, in my opinion, Rays prospects, when they come up, tend to perform well, is because the Rays tend to put their prospects in positions to succeed. Outside of emergencies, you know, they may have emergencies where they need a prospect to come up. But generally speaking, if they have the ability to, they're going to put their prospects in positions to succeed, which is why we generally see Rays players do better coming up than maybe some other organizations, because they're looking to put them in a place to succeed instead of just throwing them into the fire. And I think that's what we're going to see the Rays do. I think we're going to see some combination of Walls and Basabe to start the year, and then, you know, see what Caminero can do as he gets a little bit more training in Durham, and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I think that's what the plan is going to be. I'm not thrilled about it, just because I don't think a championship winning team has Taylor Walls as the everyday shortstop. He's just an absolute dead zone with the bat. Even though he's got quite a good command of the strike zone, he does take his walks and he doesn't swing outside the zone often. When he does hit the ball, he never hits it particularly hard. His quality of contact when he does hit the ball isn't great. And Basabe is he's like fine, but not particularly good at anything. It's just a bit frustrating with such a key position, not having an answer. And it's nobody's fault. Within the organization anyway. So it's frustrating. I heard someone Mario on Twitter said Luis Guillaume we should go get because high contact, decent fielding. But honestly, I think that's like a tiny step forward, but it's going to cost something. It's just tough because if you're going to make an improvement on Walls and Basabe, you're going to need someone who's like, you know, a 3-4 win player, and they don't come easy, especially at that position. And again, I think the Rays are probably looking at someone like Carson Williams to be the next everyday answer at shortstop, but he's still a couple of years away.
Yep, I completely agree. I don't know that really. I'm not really a fan of any of the sort of options that are out there right now for the Rays to pick up from a shortstop perspective. I think you're 100% right. The idea of having to like pay for a like minor upgrade at shortstop, like, you know, even a guy like, you know, Kyle Farmer, I've seen some people throw that out there. The upgrade over Walls is just, he's a league average bat and a good fielder. And he gives you about 2 WAR. Like, that's, you can get that from Walls and Basabe. I just don't know what the benefit of going and trading for someone like that is. I mean, you got those. I think you've got, you know, we've got Kyle Farmer at home. You know, we've got Luis Guillermo Gore. I don't know how to say his name at home. Like, we've already got those guys. I don't think those guys are a significant upgrade over, you know, Walls and Basabe. So I think that's what we're probably going to end up, you know, running with. So it just sort of is what it is. We are going to be, guys don't go anywhere. We are going to still be asking a question that's going to come later in the episode. But if you are out there and you are seeing that, you know, let's say you just lost your favorite shirt and I'm not going to expand the analogy anymore. Let's just say you don't have it for whatever reason. You do not have your favorite shirt anymore and you are looking for a new favorite shirt. And, you know, from the race perspective, they don't have an easy way to upgrade. You have a very easy way to upgrade, and that is to go to shop.rblrsports.com, where you can get 10% off of everything that you want to buy. There are some great shirts. There's some hats on there that are pretty awesome too. So if you need to make an upgrade to your wardrobe because you've lost your 6 WAR shirt, go ahead and get a shirt or hat or whatever you'd like at shop.rblrsports.com. 10% off everything with promo code Flappy.
And yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, I couldn't think up an awful comparison for what you would have in the same way of drip like a Rays tank. But what I would say is that you should buy your shirts now before Zach gets a Trask train shirt on the store.
Believe me, Baker's not been playing. We're recording this on Sunday around 2:30 in the afternoon Eastern time. Baker's not been playing well. The Trask train is still accepting tickets. We are still selling tickets for the Trask train. It's not too late. And don't take this away from you guys, because this is literally the only joy I have in football right now. The Gators suck. The Patriots suck. It's terrible for me. I don't even know why I'm watching football anymore. But, you know, one thing I do want to watch is Remy Bunikevich, who was on here as a guest. How are you doing, Remy?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing great. I'm just gonna continue to use this as a way to forget about what I just watched from the football perspective the last 2 days. And what we are going to talk about right now is some really interesting things that have happened this week and are going to happen going forward with regards to some Rule 5 and some roster crunch. But one thing that, you know, one the other piece of news we haven't talked about yet because we wanted to get your thoughts on it is the addition of Tyler Alexander earlier this week, acquired by the Rays. What are your? I know you've got some thoughts on him. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, Alexander possesses – I mean, he's got a great command arsenal, and he's a pronator just because he's able to throw a high carry fastball and a really good changeup. But, yeah, as I said previously, one thing to look at, he has one of the lowest walk rates in baseball among qualified – I think it's like 40 innings pitched, but he has a 2.8% walk rate. Wow. Again, it's really That's elite. Insane. And then his K rate was the highest of his career at 24.3%.
So you think he's moving in the right direction?
Yeah, go ahead.
You just think he's moving in the right direction, like he's developing in a positive direction right now?
Yeah, I think that a comparison of a player who's on the roster right now would be Jeffrey Springs, right? He's got high command and really good fastball stuff. Alexander comps pretty similarly. He's throwing his fastball around 90. He's able to get two-plane movement, spins the fastball pretty well. And just like Springs, he'll throw a cutter and a slider shape, as well as a changeup that isn't grading out great right now, but with the Rays' help, it could turn into a devastating pitch against right-handed batters.
Go ahead, Pat.
So when we acquired Alexander from Detroit, I went and had a look around, and something that like blew my mind was Fangraphs have a metric known as location plus, which kind of grades out how well a pitcher commands his pitches and how the location of his pitches and how effective that is. And among pitchers that have thrown at least 40 innings, which isn't a huge sample, but enough to get you on the door, over 40 innings, Alexander was second in the big leagues this year in location plus, which is 110. So 100 is league average again, but there's far less variance on those kind of pitching plus numbers than the hitting ones like WRC plus. So 110 has him second in the league. And then the thing that concerns me though is his stuff plus, which is the kind of other side to that coin, which demonstrates how scary a pitcher's velocity or break is. It's 87, which is excruciatingly low, below average in terms of the quality of the pitch itself. It's low velocity, and they don't even grade his break massively well. He has the command. He doesn't have the stuff. How do you work around that if you're a pitcher like Alexander?
I think part of it is a shift in the Rays' pitching philosophy. I mean, I could be wrong because, you know, I don't work with them. I'm not some sort of internal guy, right? But I think that it's kind of a belief in them to develop pitcher stuff. You've seen them acquire, you know, Zach Eflin and Aaron Civale more recently, who are much more location-bound or command-bound starters, and Jeffrey Springs in the past, and Drew Rasmussen even. And I think it's more about the belief that they can develop stuff. So they definitely see something there that they like. Maybe they believe that commander location is a lot less taught, which is a complete shift from what they've done in the past with acquiring high stuff relievers. But I think it might be that his location is so good, right, that it's hard to pass up on a guy like that on the waiver wire. And then coupling that with the belief that a couple of very slight pitch shape tweaks, I think they could maybe like get the slider to be thrown harder or seam shift wake the changeup or add a splitter, something to complement the fastball. That's really their belief there.
So what do you think Tyler Alexander's ceiling is on the Rays? Like, do you think, like you made the comparison to Jeffrey Springs. Do you think if he sticks with the team, you know, for any length of time, do you think he has potential to be the next Jeffrey Springs?
I think it's definitely possible. It just comes with more arsenal adjustments. I think that's really what it is. Already, just the fastball quality is really, really good. And that's what Jeffrey Springs had when he started out. Is the rest of his pitches, like his changeup and slider, were both like league average or subpar. But if they're able to stretch him out, don't see why he can't be, you know, some sort of bulk or starting the back end starting pitcher guy, or I mean starting pitcher in spring training for them. So definitely it could be more.
Yeah, and I sort of wonder if, you know, we were sort of surprised by the moving on from Josh Fleming in the offseason that they did. I sort of wonder if maybe Tyler Alexander is the replacement almost for Josh Fleming, like a guy that can come in and like can start if he needs to, but can also throw like two or three innings from the bullpen. I think maybe we might see Alexander, if he sticks with the team, as being a guy like that. I think he has some potential to do something like that. Sort of bouncing off of that, one of the reasons why we're saying if he sticks with the team is because coming up this Thursday on the 16th is the Rule 5 draft. And in that draft, for those who don't know, Rule 5 eligible players in every organization go into a draft, and they're draftable by any major league team unless they are placed on the 40-man roster. So the Rays will have to make some decisions with some of their Rule 5 draft eligible guys and decide whether they want to keep them on the team by putting them on the 40-man or risk potentially losing them by putting them in the Rule 5 draft. Remy, do you have any you got any insight or any thoughts on what we might see from the Rays in the Rule 5 draft coming up?
Yeah, so I think we talked about this briefly before the show. 1 second to pull this up, but there were some guys that I thought are more interesting. I mean, first off, they signed Alex Jackson to minor league deal. So as I mentioned before, Alex Jackson, because he was signed a minor league deal, can be taken in the AAA Rule 5 draft or the MLB Rule 5 draft. So they might just add him to roster spot outright, even though he's been dealing with some shoulder injuries. And then some prospects I like, although there are like a ton of guys who are available. I think Austin Shenton, Cole Wilcox, Evan Reifert, you know, they all fulfill different roles, but Shenton, he's a left-handed third baseman, more of a pure hitter. Could probably play second base and left field if they need to. And he's a really good pure hitter at the AAA level. Making that jump to the MLB level will make him even better. Cole Wilcox could be some sort of high stuff bolt guy in the future. And Evan Reifert's a reliever that they liked a lot last year as they invited him to spring training, but he's just been suffering with injuries.
Yeah, and the concerning thing with trying to add those guys, so you listed four names there. And we currently have a full 40-man roster. All 40 slots are taken with the addition of Tyler Alexander. Who do you think might be the odd men out to kind of find those slots, do you think?
Well, as much as I like, you know, like Bruhan and Calvin Fauché and even the newly added Tyler Alexander and Greg Jones and Manuel Margot and Harold Ramirez, I think all of these guys have a real chance at playing somewhere else, especially Bruhan. He's out of options, didn't fare too well at AAA or MLB this year. And honestly, they just have other, inside options like Basabe and Caminero coming up that fulfill pretty similar roles to him. Fauché, he's been injured pretty much most of this year, dealing with some sort of elbow injury. He's got really, really good stuff, but the command's not really clicking. They had him work as a bolt guy. That didn't really work out. One reason I would keep Alexander is because he has options, even if he is eligible for arbitration. Greg Jones, another high upside prospect, but he's just been super injured. Margot, as we know, defensive-minded center field, but he's due for a high payout soon. I think they signed him to an extension. And Ramirez, he's a really, really good pure hitter, but they might just substitute him with other guys who are more active on the roster.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what you think, Pat, but I kind of agree. I think that, you know, a lot of the guys you mentioned are like, I think Vidal Bruhan is gone. I think, you know, there's a decent chance that Greg Jones is gone. Although the fact that they've kept Greg Jones around for as long as they have does make me wonder if there's something they see, or if they feel like, or maybe they feel like that he's a good trade, you know, a trade chip. Mm-hmm. I think there's a chance we see a trade this week from some of these guys we've talked about. I think you mentioning Harold and Margot is very apt, because I think those guys are big trade candidates, or Aranda too. I think Aranda could be, Ramirez are kind of the same player. They're just Ramirez has got more major league experience. Although I guess I would rather see Ramirez in the field. I'd really rather see neither of them ever in the field. But I guess I'd rather see Ramirez if you just held a gun to my head and said you gotta watch one of them, and you know, you'd be very unhappy in that scenario. But I think either of those guys could potentially get traded. And I think a guy like Fauché is probably a casualty of this as well. Just it was a kind of a cool experiment because the stuff is wild, but it's a little too wild. I feel like we're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop with some control there, and it just kind of hasn't happened. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement. Another name that kind of comes up that I'm like, I don't know if he's got a shot to stick on the roster. Jacob Lopez is on the roster right now. I don't see him sticking around. And with trades, I think definitely trades are on the horizon in the coming days. But I also want to temper expectations. I don't think we're going to go out and acquire some crazy name. I would expect it to be, all right, see you later, Greg Jones, or see you later, Fauché or Aranda. And we do the cycle where we get, you know, a guy that was drafted in 2022, who's in single A next year, just to keep the rotation of guys moving. The Rays do this very well of getting guys before they become famous prospects and then getting them there. And I think that's kind of what the plan would be in terms of moving that kind of trimming the fat on the 40-man roster to get these final guys in. The Rays actually made a Rule 5 pick that was quite successful this year, Kevin Kelly. He was taken up in the Rule 5 draft last year and stuck around, which is great. You don't always see that. I don't know if either of you guys have done much scouting about names that could be available in the Rule 5 and the Rays could take a shot at. Do either of you guys know?
Honestly, not too much. I feel like I've kind of scoured like minor league free agents thus far, so not too much of an emphasis on people who are already on 30 or on AAA rosters. I think that the Rays, I mean, they're always going to look for guys with high stuff, and Kevin Kelly is a mix of high stuff and pretty good command. Maybe if they strike gold there, but I think they're just going to go on the AAA Rule 5 side and add some relievers like they did last year. I don't really see them going out and finding another Kevin Kelly. It's possible, but just unlikely with how crowded the roster currently is.
Yeah, I think the crowdedness of the roster, just real quick, I think is a really good point. I just don't know there's really a whole lot of room unless there's somebody they just really love that we haven't heard about yet.
Yeah, I agree. And then last question kind of on the Rule 5 stuff is, do you see anyone that's in danger of going, being poached in the Rule 5 draft?
Ooh, Zach, do you want to go first?
I think you know, of the guys that we've mentioned, I think Reifert's probably the one because he's got some really cool stuff. I think he's got a team could say, we want to see what that stuff could do in our organization. I think there's a decent chance that someone could take a flyer on him. But as we kind of, you know, as we look at these guys that we're talking about for our Rule 5 draft, I think a lot of the guys that we'd be scared of losing in Rule 5 have kind of migrated onto the roster or migrated out of the system in one way or another over the course of this year, like a Manzardo, for example. Like, they've just kind of migrated out of the system. So it's a little bit less. There's a couple guys, but it's, I think at one point we were like, we got 8 guys. We got to find a spot for these 8 guys. And it's kind of not that way anymore. I don't know that there's a whole lot of the guys that we've talked about for Rule 5 that are going to absolutely get taken. I guess maybe Alex Jackson could get taken. I don't know. There's nobody that I'm like, man, are we going to lose this guy? Not really. Yeah. I mean, even Shenton, I'm just kind of like, if we lose him, I kind of, you know, it's kind of whatever.
Yeah, Shenton, Cameron Meisner as well has been doing okay at AAA. Yeah. There's a team that's like really bereft of outfielders and want to take a flyer on Meisner. Because the thing that we always forget about Rule 5 is if you take a guy on the Rule 5, you've got to keep him on your active roster for the whole season to keep him.
Right.
And that's why it's really rare that position players get taken, because it's quite hard to hide a position player on your roster for a whole year, especially if they go for a slump. But with pitchers, it's slightly easier, especially relievers. You can kind of keep them in a mop-up role or bring them in every now and then and keep them hidden on the roster. But with position players, it's nowhere near as much of a worry.
I think a lot of these guys could definitely go in the AAA section as the minor league portion. I don't really see many, as you're saying, major league Rule 5 draft. Maybe Shenton, maybe a team like the Reds could take like Curet or Yaniel Curet, I think is his name. He's a high stuff double A starter. Another guy, Ben Peoples. If the Rays don't protect him, Cole Wilcox will be taken by an organization in the minor league section.
Yeah.
So I think that either a lot of these guys are going to go on that AAA minor league portion, or they're just going to be traded outright.
Yep. I think Wilcox would be gone. I think I'm kind of like mentally assuming he's going to be on, they're going to put him on the roster. So I didn't mention him. I think Wilcox would 100% go if he was available. I just sort of mentally am assuming he's going to end up on the 40 man. That's the one guy that I think would probably go.
I was going to say quickly, I could see an argument against him just because he's been, I think I was talking with Jacob McCauley, right? He runs the Rays Farm Report. And we noticed that Wilcox, he's been dealing with like a ton of injuries. He came back from Tommy John surgery. And then halfway through the year, and I think is when he got promoted AAA, his elbow just like wasn't feeling good again. And that is not something you want for someone who's a high stuff potential next starter. So got to be careful with him.
My heart over my head is like, oh, please keep Cole Wilcox because he is the last remaining hope of the Blake Snell trade. Because Mejia got, of course, not out of the organization. Patino never worked out. Blake Hunt, somewhat surprisingly, shipped off. So now we're down to just Cole Wilcox as the only prospect that came back from Blake Snell still in the org. And we've had basically a backup catcher for a year and a half. In Mejia as the only kind of measurable return for Blake Snell. And I'm like, oh, please let us have something.
So, unfortunately, it's not looking too good for that trade. But who knows? Maybe this offseason we'll get something unexpected and we'll see another trade that will make us forget about that one. I think it's kind of tomorrow. Yeah, maybe so.
Like, hopefully, like, I think the Rays – last 3 years have made that like Junior Caminero trade every single Rule 5 deadline. Look at, you know, Tobias Myers for Junior Caminero. And before that, I think, was it 2020? Christopher Sanchez was flipped for Curtis Meade.
True.
Those are both two really, that's a really good players.
Point. Yeah. That's a really good point. Well, this has been some really, I think, really insightful stuff. Thank you for coming on again, Remy. And you out there in the audience that are watching right now, you should, after you get done watching this episode, you should go immediately to the RBLR Rays Twitter page and find RBLR, or you can go straight to rblrsports.com and find Remy's latest article, which was a really, really cool article about some starting pitching that could be potentially a target for the Rays. Go read that article. It's a great article. Do you have any idea what could be coming in the future for your next article?
Yeah. So I mentioned a couple of starting pitchers that, you know, you can go check out. I think I'm going to move on to maybe another set of either MLB relievers or minor league relievers, just guys with high stuff who the organization has like before either mentioned in trades or just, you know, StatCast, AAA data. It looks really amazing, but I think that's what's more on the future.
Yes, and if you want to find out about some of that stuff, go to rblrsports.com, read his last article. If you haven't read the one before that, read that article and stay tuned for the articles to come in the future. Last thing before we let you guys go for the day, for this episode, is we want to hit you with our next question of the week. And that question is, as we discussed earlier in the episode, we have had some frustration around Silver Slugger and Gold Glove, some players that deserve to win. We didn't talk about it. Gold Glove, there wasn't really anybody out there for us to deserve to win that. But our question to you, the audience, is who do you think will be the next Gold Glove or Silver Slugger winning player on the Rays? Who's the next guy that's going to win that major award and bring that hardware home for the Rays? So hopefully, I hope to see someone soon next year, but just want to hear what you guys think about that. And you and Pat will be tweeting out that question middle of the week. Just as a reminder for you guys, at Depress Rays down there, you can see on screen. Make sure you give him a follow if you haven't already. And we're going to be giving that question out. So make sure if you want to just drop your opinion in the comments of the video or on the post when we post this, absolutely go ahead and do that. And as you are doing that, make sure you're liking and subscribing, continuing to help us build this, you know, this awesome group of guys like Remy, Pat, me, as we're continuing to build out and giving you guys the best Rays show that we possibly can. We'd love to have you guys around. Thank you guys for giving us another great show. Thank you, Remy. Thank you, Pat, for another awesome show. We're looking forward to continue to go through the off season and continue to, you know, build up towards the next season. Excited to see what comes in the future. But for now, go Rays.
Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.